When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey humans, want to optimize your cardiovascular health with real data? SciFox Health offers the easiest, most affordable blood biomarker testing kits. Test 17 key biomarkers like cholesterol, ApoB, and hemoglobin A1C from the comfort of your own home and get results at your fingertips in just a few days. Get 20% off at SciFoxHealth.com/yami. Know your biomarkers and live healthier.
It is absolutely crucial for your child to be bored. It is so crucial for brain development, rest and restorativeness, and imagination and creativity to allow the brain time to just be. And a lot of times that's when that processing will happen.
You are here for a reason, but navigating this human life can be challenging. How do you care for your body, mind, and spirit to make the most of your time here on Earth? How can you harness your incredible human potential? In this podcast, we explore these questions and more to help you craft your best life yet. Welcome to I Am Human. Welcome, humans. I am your host, Dr. Yami, and I'm so grateful to be here with you today. Thank you for subscribing, rating, reviewing, and sharing this podcast. To be human means to learn how to slow down enough to allow for health and well-being, particularly brain health. And my guest today has learned this for herself and for her patients. Dr. Ellie McGregor is an integrative functional medicine pediatrician specializing in brain health. Her work involves treating teens, children, and young adults with anxiety, depression, and ADHD while reducing or eliminating the need for medication. With 16 years of experience as a board-certified pediatrician, her expertise is supported by extensive continuing education. She graduated from one of the most highly respected integrative medicine programs in the country, the University of Arizona Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine. Her pediatric training was performed at Nicholas Children's Medical Center in Miami, Florida, and she studied at Kansas City University Osteopathic Medical School. Additional education was received from the Kalish Institute, the Institute of Functional Medicine, and the Kresser Institute for Functional and Evolutionary Medicine. She is not just a pediatrician. She's a yogi, celiac warrior, and hiking enthusiast who shares her 750-square-foot cottage with both her husband and three obnoxiously loud shepherd mixes. And in this episode of I Am Human, we have a really interesting conversation that I think that you'll really appreciate. We talk about her path to becoming a pediatrician and how she realized that she needed to learn more than just traditional medicine to help her patients. We learn about what she's most passionate about. We learn about brain health, what it means, and how we can support it. We talk a little bit about ADHD. We talk about important lifestyle measures that she feels are important to maintain brain health and well-being in children, and what she would do if she had a magic wand, which I was quite surprised by her answer, but I think it was fantastic. I know that you're going to love this episode and Dr. McGregor, and all of her info is in the show notes if you would like to reach out to her, learn more about her. So thank you again for being with me today. I really appreciate you. I hope that you have a fantastic day. And now let's welcome Dr. Ellie McGregor.
The information on this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not meant to replace careful evaluation and treatment. If you have concerns about your health or well-being, please consult a healthcare professional.
Dr. Ellie McGregor, welcome to I Am Human. It's such a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
Yeah, well, I look forward to getting to know you a little bit more. So let's start at the beginning of your path. Tell me about your path to becoming a pediatrician.
There's a lot to that answer, but to sum it up, I trained as a conventional regular pediatrician at Nicklaus Children's Hospital in Miami, Florida, and I practiced in Utah for about 7 years with some great docs out there doing some really good work. But eventually, I just, realized that I didn't have the skills and knowledge that, one, that I wanted, and two, that my patients and parents wanted. And that was a lot of information about holistic health. And parents would ask me, can I use chamomile for my child and things like this? And I really didn't know. So I went on to pursue integrative medicine at that time. And then I went out and worked in California for another great practice. But it was the middle of the COVID pandemic, and my practice quickly changed from about, 10 to 15% of my patients, coming with symptoms of like anxiety and depression and ADHD to about 40 to 50%. And it was really shocking and jarring. And I knew that I had all of these skills in integrative and functional medicine that I could bring to the table, but in that particular practice, there, while they were very open to a lot of things, there were some guardrails that I couldn't, use all of these skills that I had. So that's where Middle Path Integrated Pediatrics was born.
Well, tell me, why did you even want to become a doctor? Was it inspired in your childhood? Did something happen, or did it just seem like the right thing to do? Tell me more about that.
Oh my gosh. I wish that I had one of those. I hear about doctors all the time that have these, amazing stories of being 3 years old and, saying, I want to be a doctor. But I didn't have that. I actually started out as a vocal performance major in college. And I was doing that and I was heading down that path. But I was taking, biology and physics and other courses as well, just for interest. And I just fell in love with biology. And I started doing, research, and I thought I was going to go into academic research, actually. But honestly, I just didn't have the personality for it. I really wanted to interact with people. I wanted to work with humans. And ultimately, I applied for medical school. And, during my medical school rotations, that's where I fell in love with, pediatric medicine. I actually worked for a lovely doctor in Kansas City who served under-resourced families who had just a wonderful clinic. And he was so inspiring to me that led me to where I am today with being a pediatrician.
Oh my gosh, that's fascinating. I've never heard anybody say that they were taking physics for fun. I don't think ever. So that's very unique. So what about the vocal performance? Do you miss that? Do you still get to do some of that in your life, or what happened to that?
Well, I love to sing, but I have to admit that my vocal performance is mostly limited to nights at karaoke. So not a whole lot of professional singing going on other than around, friends and family is where I continue that hobby. But I've always been like that. I have a strong artistic side to myself and a strong scientific side to myself. And I think that explains why I'm, in love with holistic medicine, because I think it brings all of those components to the table.
Wow, that's super interesting. Okay, so you kind of already answered my next question, which is how, when and how you realized that you wanted to apply more than just traditional medicine to your practice. Do you feel like you had some of that even from the beginning, or do you think that it was really prompted by this sharp increase in anxiety and mental health disorders during the COVID pandemic?
I think it's just something that unfolded over the years. I grew up, most of my formative years were in small towns in Missouri, and I really wasn't exposed to anything other than regular medical doctors or osteopaths. And I'm an osteopath, and I thought, that's the extent of alternative or complementary medicine is being an osteopath. And I knew that it was a little bit more holistic, so I chose that path. But I didn't know much about acupuncturists. I think I had heard the word. I didn't know about naturopaths. I had no idea that there was this entire other world out there. And I thought that the only way to pursue becoming a healer was really just the traditional medical school route. So I did that. And then in that process, which, is amazing from, a scientific and modern medicine standpoint. But, you know, the flip side is when I was out practicing that, I really noticed that there were deficiencies and areas, you know, around prevention and around, you know, all of these aspects that we consider in holistic health, like nutrition, environment, mind-body connection, toxins. So there's, you know, there's this whole other world out there that I hadn't considered and wasn't exposed to that I thought was important to bring into my practice, not only for my patients, but also myself. So I, you know, I pursued it and I was really interested and it opened, you know, after my fellowship through University of Arizona with Andrew Weil, you know, the guy with the little beard and he's got the restaurant in LA and he's got that cute magazine, that guy. So I went to his fellowship and it just really opened my eyes to everything that was out there. You know, by then I had heard of some of these other modalities, but I didn't know a lot. And I was able to study all of those and then go on and pursue more training in functional medicine, which is a kind of different type of medicine. So a lot of people get confused between what is integrative and what is functional. And integrative is encompassing all the different modalities. So how can we bring in everything that's evidence-based out there? And functional is one specific type of modality. So that's kind of the distinction there. But to answer your question, before I go off on too much of a tangent, it really was this kind of gradual unfolding and figuring out like, hey, there's this other thing out here and how can I apply it and get the training to do it well.
In retrospect, are you surprised that there are so many things we don't learn in medical school that
100%.
Apply to, you know, keeping people healthy?
100%. I am still shocked to this day that as a pediatrician, I did not receive lactation training. I think that most of my patients assume that I'm a fully trained lactation expert. And while I have definitely done a lot of reading and research and education on my own, that is not something that I was trained on in medical school and had to go out and seek, which is absolutely shocking, right? Because breastfeeding is one of the most basic things that we can help people do to create and maintain an environment of health for their child. Of course, there's many reasons people cannot, and that deserves a lot of discussion as well. I don't believe in shaming anyone that cannot physically or mentally breastfeed. But in those initial days, for those that do want to try, you know, supporting them is one of the most basic and fundamental things we could do. So breastfeeding, nutrition, okay, I don't know about you, but my extent of my nutrition training was eat your veggies, and here's how you calculate the amount of calories a child would need to grow. And beyond that, there wasn't a whole lot of discussion around, well, which macro and micronutrients does one need for any specific reason, which is shocking, right? I mean, just these basic things, or even exercise, like how much exercise should a child be getting? I don't remember learning that. Of course, I remember learning like how to do peritoneal dialysis. Do I do any peritoneal dialysis? And for those of you who don't know, it's a way that people or children with really unfortunate kidney problems maintain health in a hospital setting. Do I do any of that? No. I don't do any of that. And these are the things that we're trained on. So it's really interesting how like we learn all of these heroic measures, or at least I did. I'm hoping things are changing now, although from my friends who just graduated residency, I don't know how much they've really shifted. But we're not learning like how do we create a generation of healthy, happy adults.
No, I think this is what I explained to people. Medicine really is acute care. We're just treating things that could kill somebody. We're doing surgeries to, you know, fix things from traumas, you know, heart attacks, those kinds of things. But medicine, I don't think for a long time, maybe never. I don't know. Maybe in the beginning it was, but I feel like now it's not really, the focus isn't about keeping people healthy. It's not about preventing. It's not about longevity. It's more about, okay, you have this problem. This is how I fix it. And some problems that aren't bad enough, they may cause a lot of issues for a person and may cause a lot of discomfort. But if it's not bad enough, we don't even have evidence about it because nobody's ever studied it because it's not killing anybody. My example for that is food sensitivities. I feel like a lot of people have food sensitivities, but we don't understand very much about it because there's not a ton of research because it's not bad enough to prompt money to go into those areas. Like nobody's paying for that kind of research, you know? So I think before I became a doctor, I also assumed that I was going to be that type of doctor that kept people healthy and that kind of thing. But really, you have to learn all of that on your own if you want to do any of that type of work. So what area of medicine are you most passionate about right now? What's really lighting your fire right now?
Oh my gosh. There are several things: skin, gut, and brain health issues. Brain health in particular has been on the forefront for me lately, as well as gut health. But of course, they're extremely intertwined. We can't get away from one versus the other. I think that to my earlier point, I think that was spurned by this situation during COVID, where I just saw so many children and teenagers suffering and adults as well. And I just felt like I have these functional medicine tools and integrative medicine tools that I could have been helping more so and could not. And that's why I birthed this practice. But I also focus a lot on gut health as well. I myself have celiac, so it's very interesting that you're talking about food sensitivity, because I think, even something as medical, I guess, quote unquote, as celiac, it's so difficult for people to get diagnosed, and really any autoimmune condition, it's so difficult for people to get diagnosed. And I think there's a lot of, I don't know if it's lore or some kind of myth that gluten sensitivity or gluten intolerance is not a problem, but it seems like many of my patients are dismissed with those types of gut symptoms or other symptoms that are not gut related. And, they end up having celiac. So I'm thinking about, now that we're talking about brain health, I'm thinking about a patient that, might have passion around ADHD. I'm thinking about a patient that actually came to me. He was actually a college kiddo, so college teenager. And he had never had ADHD. He'd never had problems focusing, never had any kind of issues in school. And then in college, he was just not doing well. And someone saw him and just was like, you know what? I think you've got ADHD and here's some Adderall. And he got sicker and sicker and thinner and more unfocused. And so, what happens? Okay, well, the medicine must not be a high enough dose. So how can we titrate the dose up to a level that it actually works? So he kept getting put on more and more stimulants. And, he came to me and I was like, okay, what blood tests have you had? Have you had any other workup done? And he's like, no, they just said, I just went there and, to my doctor, I said I couldn't focus and here I'm on Adderall. And I was just like, okay, so we haven't even rolled out the basic medical conventional things that you might think of in ADHD, which would be what? So nutritional deficiencies, lead poisoning, imbalances like zinc, copper imbalance. So, thyroid disorder. So very basic things that you could just order at any lab. Anyway, long story short, this kiddo had celiac and he was so nutritionally deficient that he couldn't even make the neurotransmitters that he needed to focus, which for anyone that doesn't know, a neurotransmitter is a little brain hormone that doesn't, a bunch of different things in our body. But the one that we think about most in ADHD is dopamine, which helps us focus. He couldn't even make that because he didn't have the B6, the magnesium, all of these things that he would, the building blocks to make these things that would help him focus. Not only that, he was exhausted and skinny and tired. Why? Because he literally could not absorb his food. And, we just need to take a step back, when we're diagnosing people with mental health conditions like ADHD, anxiety, depression, and not just assume that because they're coming with that presenting symptom, that is the diagnosis. So sometimes it's really circular, right? You go to your doctor and you're like, I have anxiety. And they're like, great, you have anxiety. And here's your medication. And that's the end of the discussion. Well, why do you have anxiety? That's the next step, right? And these are the questions that we need to be asking. Is it situational? Is it psychological? Is it nutritional? Do you have a gut infection? What else is going on? It can't just stop at, in my opinion, it can't just stop at what you have. It's why you have it.
Yeah. Well, and it seemed like in that poor patient, a lot of things were missed, because I'm assuming if he was losing weight, he was also having some gut issues and perhaps diarrhea and those kinds of things. So poor dude. Yeah. Okay. So tell me, I mean, we use this term a lot. I feel like it's definitely a buzzword right now, and that's brain health. So when you say brain health, what does that mean?
Yeah, I like the term brain health because I feel and I think that when we say mental health, it almost pulls out this part of our body away from our body. And it's as if our brain and our bodies are not connected and are not all functioning together. You know, brain health can mean many things. It can mean your ability to attend, to focus. It can mean your ability to maintain within an emotional spectrum that's typical, so not overly depressed, not overly manic. It can mean, you know, that you're not having some kind of extreme disorder like PANDAS, which is a neuropsychologic disorder you can get after strep infection. So it's a lot of things. But I like the terminology because we're not saying, oh, you have a mental health condition, which is also, you know, that's fine. Like if that's your label that you feel good about, own it. Absolutely. However, I think there's more to it than just pulling out the psyche and saying you have a mental health condition. You actually have a body condition. You know, it's not as if this part of you is separate or distinct, right? Because the way that our gut relates to our brain and our brain relates to our gut and our nutrition relates to our brain, it's all going together, the way that our liver processes toxins. So we've got this connection that's holistically working together. And I think that it's just a misnomer to say mental health and leave it at that. I think it really is an organ condition. And then I think that that terminology lends itself to thinking about how these things are connected in the body.
Well, and you know, I'm a pediatrician as well. And I just think about, you know, my passion is lifestyle medicine and starting with the basics, which I feel that 90% of Americans don't meet. Particularly my teenagers, right? They're not sleeping enough. They're stressed. They're drinking energy drinks every day, sometimes multiple times a day. Some of them, especially the high functioning ones, playing multiple sports, just very busy. Life is really intense. So before we get into the microscopic, do you try to get people just to optimize the basics, like the most obvious things, like get enough sleep, manage your stress, you know, stop drinking energy drinks, you know, those kinds of things?
Yeah, 100%. Those things are absolutely vital. I will say that sometimes it takes a little bit of time to build a relationship to get people to the point that they're able to make those changes. For example, so if someone comes in and they've got eczema, and I feel very strongly that we need to try a gluten-free diet and do some stress management and look at nutrition to make sure we're getting enough omegas, all of these things. That patient may not be ready for that. That patient's parent may not be ready or in a place to hear that or absorb it into their body. And me just being like, listen, like, what is wrong with you? Let me just shake you right now. Like, just do these things and then we'll see if it works. That is not an effective strategy. So I like to work with people over time. Sometimes doing testing can be really helpful to sort of create that connection for patients and parents. Like, hey, you know, you're not eating well, and we see that on your lab because your omegas are really low and your vitamin D is super low, and that's why you have eczema. And oh, look, your tissue transglutaminase marker, which, you know, for people that don't know, is a celiac marker, is flagging. So maybe these are things we need to look at. And sometimes it can take a while for people to process that information. You know, it's not often on the first visit. And I think that's true for most humans, right? If I'm thinking that I need a change in my life, whatever it may be, like, gosh, you know, I need to walk more or I need to do more yoga because I've let that slide because, you know, life is a tornado, right? It's not a straight line. That may take me a few weeks to process, oh, well, how can I arrange my schedule to make that happen or buy the clothes that I need because I've outgrown them or you know, maybe I need a babysitter for an hour. So there are pieces around lifestyle that I think are important to put into place leading up to those changes. But absolutely 100%, of course, the basics need to be there. It's just that not often is that the first thing that people are able to do. But once they are able to put those building blocks into place, I think that most patients and families notice the change and are able to sustain to an extent. Of course, that we are all human, as the name of this podcast goes. And we have moments where like, oh, that season of life, my exercise routine was not okay, you know, and you get back to it. But it's creating like the habits for the most part, you know, 80% of our life, we're doing X, Y, and Z. It's not we need to be perfect and 100% of the time we have to do all these behaviors, otherwise we're just a complete failure. No, you know, how can we create some basics that are happening the majority of the time and how do we address that? And I think to your point, the example around teenagers, teenagers are in a developmental stage where they're learning to be adults. They're not adults. Some of them look very adult-like, of course. But, you know, as we know, the prefrontal cortex is not developed until age 26. So, you know, we can be screaming and yelling at an immature brain. It's not going to help. So we have to allow kids to have the time to, like, process the information that we're giving and give them those skills by asking questions. I find that to be the most effective. It's like asking questions and getting the information that I need to help that person. Because I may think meditation is the greatest thing since sliced bread, but if that is not working for that particular child, I need to come up with another relaxation technique that is working for them. So there's a lot of nuance and individuality that occurs in building a lifestyle program, but 100% it's needed.
I guess what I was trying to get at is I feel like in the United States, we want a pill, we want a supplement, or we want some sort of, you know, like exotic answer to something. And one of the common things I see in teenagers is a chief complaint of fatigue. So they come in, they're tired, but like I said, they're not sleeping. They're involved in three or four sports, you know, in all of these activities. And so I think sometimes we miss the big picture, right? Like probably the first thing we should do is try to get more sleep and see if that fixes things before we're looking to see if, you know, there's something wrong with this or something wrong with this. Like, obviously, you're only sleeping 6 hours a night. That's going to make anybody, especially when you're playing sports, really tired. And that's normal. That's your body trying to tell you, get more sleep and get more rest. That's the only thing I was getting at. So I feel like in the United States, that's a very common thing, right? We're like, we have this issue, but we didn't even look at the big picture of the most obvious things, which is lifestyle medicine.
I do think that, to your point, another factor in brain health is this inclination to overschedule and overachieve or be overly productive. There's something with that, you know, capitalist mentality where we're go, 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 go. And I would say to parents that are feeling, hey, I'm overwhelmed, my child's overwhelmed, I don't know where to start with all of my lifestyle factors, I would say ruthlessly cut things out. That would be the number one thing that I would recommend. Create time for yourself and your child. That really is one of the most important things that you can do for brain health because, believe it or not, it is absolutely crucial for your child to be bored. It is so crucial for brain development, rest and restorativeness, and imagination and creativity to allow the brain time to just be. And a lot of times that's when that processing will happen. So like, you know, maybe you've mentioned, hey, I see that you're, you know, on the phone a lot, like what's going on there? And you've talked about it. That may take that child a few weeks to process that information that you've talked about. You know, it's not going to be the next day like, hey, you're right, I should get off my phone. You know, that's just not how humans are in general, and especially not children who are developing.
No, and we're all addicted to our phones, so basically, it's just, you know, like one person addicted to the phone, talking to another person addicted to the phone.
September 29th is World Heart Day to raise awareness of the number one global cause of death, cardiovascular disease. We know that two critical risk factors for the development of cardiovascular disease are high cholesterol and diabetes. But so many people are living with high cholesterol and elevated blood sugars without a clue. If you want to live a longer, healthier life, it is essential to know your numbers so that you can take control of your health and make changes as needed. But we all know that getting labs is not an easy task. First, you have to see your doctor. Then they have to order the labs. Then you go to the lab and hope they can draw your blood without too much pain. And then wait for results. Once you have the results, you may not even know what they mean. What if there was a better way? SciFox Health has pioneered a novel approach to create the most comprehensive, most convenient, and least expensive at-home blood test on the market. They are the easiest, most affordable way to check your blood biomarkers. They give you the ability to test 17 critical blood biomarkers in a single at-home kit. It's easy to use and offered at an incredibly low price. It's clinically accurate, and you don't need a doctor's order to obtain it. If you want to decrease your risk of cardiovascular disease, there are several key biomarkers that can give you a picture of your cardiovascular and metabolic health. The SciFox Health Kit includes total cholesterol, triglycerides, HDL, LDL, ApoB, apolipoprotein A1, and hemoglobin A1c. ApoB is now being recognized as an important indicator of cardiovascular health, and most people have never had this blood test measured. SciFox Health reports are not just raw data. The team at SciFox created a unique scoring system called the Axes of Wellness that spans different health and lifestyle categories, such as inflammation, metabolic, and cardiovascular health. With this, they take the guesswork out of interpreting your results and empower you with actionable insights to improve your wellness. You can view your results in your secure dashboard, which includes personalized recommendations. It's very easy and convenient. Your kit is mailed directly to your home. Then you open your kit and simply follow the instructions. You supply just a few drops of blood and mail it back in a prepaid envelope. And incredibly, you get your results in a few days. It really is that simple. You don't need to drive anywhere or call the doctor's office repeatedly to get results. It's affordable and you have actionable data at your fingertips. Before I completed my first SciFox Health Kit, I had never had my ApoB measured, and I was so glad to have this piece of data about my cardiovascular health. SciFox Health is the easiest, most affordable way to routinely check your blood biomarkers and stay on top of your health. I'm so excited to be working with SciFox Health. Visit scifoxhealth.com/yami to get 20% off to test your blood at home and begin working toward a healthier you. That's scifoxhealth.com/yami. If you're obsessed with real-time data and want to know what's going on with your metabolism, you'll want to try Lumen. Lumen is the world's first handheld metabolic coach. It's a device that measures your metabolism through your breath. On the app, it tells you if you're burning fat or carbs and gives you tailored guidance to improve your nutrition, workouts, sleep, and even stress management. It can also track your cycle as well as the onset of menopause and adjust your recommendations to keep your metabolism healthy through hormonal shifts so you can keep up your energy and stave off cravings. All you have to do is breathe into your Lumen first thing in the morning and you'll know whether you're burning mostly fats or carbs. Then Lumen gives you a personalized nutrition plan for that day based on your measurements. Lumen will give you tips to keep you on top of your health game. Listen up. Metabolic health matters. Most chronic diseases that are preventable with diet and lifestyle habits are caused by dysfunctions in metabolism. When you have a healthy metabolism, you feel better and you perform better. You have improved sleep, healthy weight maintenance, and enough energy to do the activities that you love. I'm getting back on my routine after celebrating my birthday for a few weeks, and I'm using my Lumen to get back into my fasting regimen. I use my Lumen every morning upon waking, and it really helps me stay on track. The insights you get from Lumen can be very helpful for those trying to optimize their energy levels, sleep, or those using intermittent fasting to reach their health goals. So if you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me/DrYami to get 15% off your Lumen. That's lumen.me/DrYami for 15% off your purchase. Thank you, Lumen, for sponsoring this episode. Well, it's official. Back to school season has begun. Why does it always seem to sneak up on me? We are now in the whirlwind of drop-offs and pickups, sport practices, and parent volunteer hours. There is so much to do all the time. That's why I'm really glad we have ways to keep eating healthy even when the schedule is bursting at the seams. If you want to ensure that you will be able to put delicious and nutritious meals on the table during the busy school fall season, I highly recommend Green Chef. Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well, delivering pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited processed ingredients. Green Chef sends organic, fresh produce and chef-designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing, and convenient meals that make it easy to stick to a healthy living routine. You get to choose from 80 plus flavor-packed options that allow you to take back time in the kitchen with dinner ready in 30 minutes. Here's the best part. Green Chef delivers everything you need to make convenient, wholesome, and delicious meals directly to your doorstep. Each meal kit includes pre-measured ingredients, as well as some produce that comes already pre-chopped, as well as custom sauces that are pre-made in-house. They also provide the recipe cards, and the meals are very simple to make. It's a delicious, fresh, home-cooked meal without the hassle. Green Chef takes the stress out of cooking. The recipes are easy to follow and everything you need is included, so even less experienced cooks in your house can prepare a delicious home-cooked meal. I appreciate the variety of plant-based meals available. This week we had curry-spiced sweet potato wraps, mushroom artichoke and pesto flatbreads, and spicy peanut and veggie sesame rice bowls. Those were extremely delicious. The recipes are so yummy and approved by the whole family. I love that they include lots of veggies for a delicious and nutritious meal. The vegan meal kits are hearty, so you don't have to worry that you'll go hungry. And now you have the option to double your portion of protein or veggies, and you can swap to a plant-based protein like organic tofu or tempeh. We have loved using Green Chef in our household. If you want fresh, home-cooked, healthy meals to put on the table, look no further than Green Chef. And now, take your healthy routine further with 2x the support. You get to select from Green Chef's healthiest menu ever and access thousands of top-rated gyms and fitness studios worldwide from ClassPass. For a limited time, new Green Chef subscribers will also receive 50 free credits to use at ClassPass, about a month's worth of membership. Go to greenchef.com/IamHumanClass for 50% off your first box plus 50 free credits with ClassPass. That's code IamHumanClass at greenchef.com/IamHumanClass to get 50% off your first box plus 50 free ClassPass credits. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then, when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. Renting from Armoire is perfect for me because I love fashion. I get bored easily. I love to try new things with low commitment, and I'm also a minimalist who is budget conscious. Clothing rental just makes sense. It's so fun. You get to try new styles that you may not be brave enough to buy and keep forever, and your wardrobe stays fresh and updated. We live in a small old house with tiny closets that get cluttered easily, but I love clothes. I don't want to compromise. I want to look cute and feel great, and with clothing rental, it's a win-win. My first shipment of rental items arrived quickly, and all my items were neatly folded, clean, and ready to wear. The first item I tried on was a pair of overalls from Wild Fang, and I've already worn them 3 times because they're adorable and so soft and comfy. Today, I'm wearing a beautiful floral linen wrap dress from Yumi Kim, and I feel so feminine. It's really elevated my mood. I have 4 more items to try this week, including some cute corduroy wide leg ankle pants, a pair of super wide leg jeans, a sophisticated midi dress, and a puffy sleeve V-neck sweater. Getting dressed in the morning is exciting, and I feel great all day. There are so many reasons to try Armoire. First and foremost, you'll always have something new to wear without the hassle and closet clutter. It's affordable. They have many plans to choose from, depending on how often you'd like to swap out your outfits, but it could actually save you money in the long run. It's sustainable. You no longer have to feel bad about only wearing an outfit once, letting it sit in your closet for years until you finally donate it. It also feels good to support a company that is women-founded and women-led. And finally, Armoire can help you define your personal style. It gives you recommendations based on your body type and what you already like, but it also gives you the freedom to explore different styles you may not otherwise buy. If you've never tried something like this before but feel intrigued, I recommend that you give it a try. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/Dr. Yami. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/DRYAMI, to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm a mother. My oldest is 19. My youngest is 14. And, you know, things really do happen so fast. And what I try to encourage my teenagers now is to slow down. You don't have to do everything all at once. You have your whole life. Enjoy your childhood because it's going to be over so quick, you know? And I think for parents too, enjoy them while they're young, have encouraged the kids to have fun. You know, you don't have to accomplish all of these things right now. You can take your time doing it. And I'm just speaking from a place of experience because I am a high achieving person that, you know, like I graduated medical school with 3 degrees plus a baby. So was that necessary? No, it was not. And so looking back, you know, those are lessons I learned about myself that I hope to pass on to my children and my patients, that it's okay to take it one step at a time. You're going to feel better. You're going to be a lot less anxious, probably less depressed, more joyful, you know? So I think that's great advice, Dr. McGregor. Well, let's talk a little bit about ADHD. I'm also very passionate about this topic. So what is your perspective on ADHD? Why do you think it's becoming more prevalent, more commonly diagnosed?
Oh my goodness. I think it's multifactorial, as many things are. There's usually not a very simple answer to most things that are as complicated as ADHD. We do know there's a genetic component. Of course, that's part of things. However, I think with everything that we now know about epigenetics, which for people that don't know, that's how our genes are affected by the world around us, what we take in nutritionally, the sleep that we get, toxins in our environment, all of these different things, that there are a lot of things that are creating a situation that is, you know, causing not only the ball to start rolling, but roll faster, right, down the hill. And, you know, those things range from, to the point that we were talking about earlier, the busy culture, the productive culture, the college prep preschool, the tutors for 5-year-olds to learn to read. You know, I understand that there are occasions where those things are needed with dyslexia and other things. However, there's a lot of pressure on kids to be go, 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 go all of the time. And there's a, and we've created an environment of inattention, right? So, you know, we've got things that are fast moving all the time for kids. I mean, you can look at, I think it's those noodle brain videos that's supposed to allow children's brains to relax. And it's actually like a video game of things flashing on the screen continuously that kids are supposed to kick and punch, to, you know, the other, you know, devices like iPads and iPhones that are constantly, you know, causing our attention span to flick every 15 to 30 seconds. So we're like physically training our brains to be inattentive. Then we've got the environment, you know, where we're intaking generally in America, poor quality diet. You know, we've got the French fries and the pizza and the food additives and the food colorings and the processed foods and the gluten and the dairy. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we can talk about there. toxins in the environment. You know, we think about some people may be affected by glyphosate and things like that, or God forbid, lead. You know, I think about those poor kiddos in Flint, Michigan with all of the lead back when that was going on. And then we've got, you know, a school environment where children are sitting all day. And the expectation is that they're like little machines that just sit at a desk and that's how learning should occur. And I don't know if most people know that, but that school environment was created based on a manufacturing practice from, I think it was in the industrial era, when people were first automating, you know, how you build cars, and it was like an assembly line. That's where that mentality came. And so now you've got a school environment that doesn't even allow children to exercise, which what does that do? Calms the body, calms the mind, you know, and helps, you know, get oxygen to the brain, things that help children focus, concentrate, and learn. So now we've got a school environment that doesn't work. We also don't have funding, by the way, for, you know, healthy food in the school, which I think is another massive problem. So you put all these pieces together and combine them with a genetic predisposition, and of course we're going to have an inattentive, unfocused generation.
And I feel like more and more I'm seeing families come. I do a lot of ADHD evaluations, and the parents are like, I just got diagnosed with ADHD. And, you know, a lot of them, they will say, I know that I've had this since I was a kid, but, you know, things were different 10, 20, 30 years ago. But now, sometimes when I get to the end of my evaluation and I'm just like, I don't think this is ADHD, I feel like people get really upset and disappointed, because I think now we expect, it's like the pendulum has swung to where it was like almost like a stigma, and nobody wanted anybody to have ADHD, even people that really needed to have help for that. And now it's like, well, I'm upset that you're not giving my child this diagnosis. So it is really interesting how the pendulum is swinging. Have you noticed that at all?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it goes back to this, what we were talking about, this culture of achievement, right? Like, okay, I have a story about this. I had a teenager come wanting ADHD medication, and I was just sort of asking kind of like the basic questions. And he's like, well, you know, I just want to do better in school. And I was like, that's kind of a weird, you know, most kids don't say that when they have ADHD. Most kids will say other things like, I can't focus, I can't, you know, I'm getting in trouble, I can't get my homework done. But he was like, I just want to do better in school. And I was like, okay, well, you know, what is your grade point average? And he was like, I have a 4.3. And I was like, well, I'm not sure you can do much better, but let's chat, right? Let's chat about this. And ultimately, you know, it turned out this child had a lot of anxiety, because in his family dynamic, the expectation was that he should go to an Ivy League school. And he wasn't certain that with a 4.3, he would actually make that dream happen. So, you know, I think it's important to ask maybe the question of like, why do we want the diagnosis? What are we hoping to achieve? And is there another way to get there? Or do we need to reframe? And that takes a lot of time, which I'm in the lucky position to have with my patients, because I'm in a membership model where I can allow for that. Many physicians don't have that luxury, unfortunately. And so it's something that I think is a conversation that just has to happen over many, many visits. But it's difficult, and there's tension around it, of course, because the expectation is whatever it may be for that family. You know, like in this child's case, you're going to go to Ivy League school and you need a 4 point, I don't know, five, or who knows? I don't know what his, you know, goal was there. But you know, why do we need this diagnosis? Is it a behavioral problem? Is there something that we need to treat in psychotherapy? Is it actually psychological? Was there trauma? So there's other things to consider. And I think having those discussions up front can be really helpful. Like, hey, I see that you are seeking this ADHD diagnosis, or you have questions about it. What's going on? Tell me what you're seeing, and what's not working, and what is working. And then, you know, unraveling those dynamics over time. And sometimes it's true. It can be disappointing for parents, because, you know, maybe they've been told like, oh, you know, their teacher is like, that's ADHD, just get this magic pill, you know, and they're really thinking that's the thing that's going to create the change, this one thing. And so many times there's never one thing. You know, even if you did do stimulant medication and you did have the diagnosis of ADHD, it doesn't end there. There's all the lifestyle things that need to occur with that, because we want to ameliorate how much medication a child is on, right? First of all, and second of all, we want to ameliorate side effects of the medication, which there's different ways to do that. Magnesium being a huge one that's missed often, right? So conversations are difficult, but they need to happen. And I don't blame parents. And I, you know, we all grow up in this culture of achievement and productivity and go, go, go. And at some point, I think that most of us get to a point either through illness, exhaustion, or just being enlightened that we're like, we're not going to do it anymore. And we have boundaries and we have to take a break and stop. But everyone has to go through that learning process and learning journey for themselves. It's not as if I can do it for someone who's 17. Sometimes it can take years for someone to process that information.
Absolutely. Everybody's on their own individual journey. And I agree with what you said before. I think some of it is this misunderstanding that there is a magic pill. Because even for children that do have the diagnosis or people that have the diagnosis, I think they know it's not a magic pill. It can help for sure. But like you said, there's still other things that, you know, need to be optimized, worked on. And it, you know, it's still going to be a struggle in a lot of situations. So yeah, I think in our society, we do want something to fix things right away and then everything be better. But unfortunately, it can be more complicated than that, especially in the parenting journey for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
So what do you think are the most important lifestyle measures to maintain brain health and well-being in children?
Oh, well, I think a lot of the things are things that we've discussed, sleep being huge. Unfortunately, as you know, most of our teenagers just really don't get enough sleep. And some of that is, you know, discussions that we need to have around phones and iPads, electronics and things like that. But some of it is honestly this situation that has been created for teenagers. For example, to the point of kiddos being in sports, maybe they need that sport for whatever it may be, a scholarship or their enjoyment, their mental health, it's their passion. You know, there may be factors around why they're in these sports, right? But then they have to come home and do homework. Well, what time does that put them in bed? Usually midnight, 1 in the morning. And if they're wound up because now they've been working academically, maybe they're not in bed till 2 or asleep till 2. And then what time do they typically have to get up for school, right? It's like 6, 7 o'clock. So how many hours are they actually getting? Then they're exhausted. What do? They're reaching for the energy drinks, the coffees, Starbucks sugar, sorry, Starbucks. And, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, I think as humans, we can get into a mindset of being like, well, that person obviously should stop drinking caffeine. But then you look at your own habits and you're like, you know what? Actually, when I'm exhausted, I'm reaching for that cup of caffeinated tea, you know? And so I think that having compassion and empathy for what that child is going through and taking the time to process, like, well, okay, this isn't working. Is there a way that we can have better sleep or a better sleep schedule? Like, can we cut the caffeine down slowly? Can we increase the protein in your diet so that you're not craving the sugar? You know, are there smaller changes that we can start with? Like, maybe it's as simple as, you know, you're still doing all of these other habits that I would rather be changed, but we add on drinking water and drink and eating protein. So we're not drastically taking someone that's over here in left field, you know, to center field in 1, 2, 3 steps. You know, it's taking the time to understand the family dynamic, right? Because children, I think this is another point, children don't live in isolation. And I think this is another problem with, you know, my medical school training, or at least something that didn't occur to me until much later. It's like, look, this child isn't, you know, I'm not treating the child. I'm treating the family. And that includes the community and the extended family. You know, what's happening at the kiddos' church? Like, what are they eating, you know, every Sunday or Wednesday or whenever they go? What's happening at grandma's house? Is she a great cook and she has poor mobility and her passion is baking and just a lot of chocolate chip cookies are happening? And that grandma or grandpa is doing everything the best they can for, you know, to provide love and care for this child. But how can we make a change there that is still giving both parties what they need, like grandma's love of baking, how can we shift it, you know, so that this child can remain healthy? And that goes into nutrition. So of course, we want to look at nutrition, processed foods being one of the worst things we can do for brain health of any kind. It's really shocking. You know, we need to have, I mean, you don't think of this, but you actually, what you're putting into your gut is what's fueling the cells in your brain, right? And I don't think we often think of it that way, like, oh, the high fructose corn syrup and the food dye I just ate is actually now fueling my brain, right? You just think, oh, I'm hungry, I'm going to eat it. And that's where, you know, making sure that you're getting the amino acids that you need to build your serotonin, which is a brain chemical that makes you happy and calm for the most part. You know, are you getting the B6 that you need? So that those are cofactors for building blocks for neurotransmitters. Are you getting the magnesium you need so you can remain calm and regulate and build other types of neurotransmitters, including serotonin? So I think it's important to recognize that what you're actually putting in your gut is fueling the brain cells. And if you're giving your physical cells junk to fuel yourself, you're going to get poor output. It's like a car. You know, you wouldn't go and take your high-performance Lamborghini to McDonald's and say, hey, can you fill this up with your fryer fat and drive around, right? Because what's going to happen? Like, I mean, I'm not a car person, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to work well. And it's the same that we're doing with our body. You know, you're putting in the fryer fat and the sugar and the additives, and you're saying, hey, now run well. It just doesn't work that way. And, you know, we're fooled into by all the cute commercials and cute boxes and, you know, everything that's marketed to children that this is something that's healthy, and it's really not. And it takes a lot of time to unwind that, you know, culturally, community-wise, and financially. You know, a lot of people are very restricted by what they're able to access, like in food deserts, if they're living in a food desert or if their budget doesn't allow for healthy foods. You know, it's not reasonable for me to tell everyone to eat organic if they actually cannot physically afford that. So where can we start? You know, do we have to start with, growing something in a pot or accessing a frozen vegetable? You know, where can we begin? Same with exercise. You know, it's all well and good to say, like, of course, exercise is super healthy for the brain. It helps get us regulated. It helps our brain chemicals work well. It helps us be happy, calm, focused. If, you know, a young child is in pre-care, and then they're going to school, and then they're going to aftercare, when and how is that going to happen? So we need to, like, look at these factors of how everything is connected. So it's interesting how the body's all connected, right? But the family's all connected, and it's all related to the community. And so breaking things down into these, like, super simplistic, well, just exercise, that doesn't work well. Same with relaxation techniques I touched on earlier is another lifestyle factor that really helps the brain. If you're a person suffering with PTSD and I'm telling you to meditate and that's leading you to ruminate on your trauma, that is not healthy for you. So as a blanket statement saying that everyone should meditate is not true. So what is the thing that is helping that particular person's brain feel good? And it may be playing the piano. It may be journaling. It may be calling a friend. It may be sitting alone. It may be socializing. So what are the relaxation techniques that are working for that brain and that family and that child? Toxins, we chatted about that briefly too. It's difficult for people to shop their way out of toxins, but we can do our best. They're pretty ubiquitous in our environment. But at least if we can get, you know, some of those other pieces in place, then I would say let's, you know, eliminate some easy things like plastics with BPA and pesticides all over the lawn and just, you know, cleaning chemicals. Like you can use vinegar instead of Windex or whatever it may be. Those are kind of easy switches for people to make, I find, for most people.
It's very complex. There's a lot of things to address. If you had a magic wand and there was one lifestyle habit or one component, behavioral component that you would just change for everybody, what would you choose first? What do you think is at that foundation of all of the stack of the different lifestyle habits?
I would, if I had a magic wand and could change society at large, I would change everyone's schedule. I mean, if we were all individually able to slow down and able to get the rest we needed and able to find the time to make a healthy dinner and go for that, you know, hour of exercise and have 20 minutes to do our relaxation technique in the evening or morning, most of these things would be attainable and doable and happening. Most people aren't sort of running around saying, wow, I really love this. This is what I want for my life. Like, great, we're going to McDonald's again because that's like literally all we've got time for. You know, most people, I'm sure there are people that love McDonald's. Sorry for people that might love McDonald's, but I find that most people are actively trying to, you know, do these things differently, but literally can't figure it out schedule-wise between working two jobs and waking up at 6 a.m. and going to bed at 2. You know, I mean, how the heck do you ask people to have homeostasis and regulate when we're going at 400% and we're not built to go at 400%? You know, we're built to sit and stare at the stars.
I love that so much. And it resonates so deeply with me because I think I'm finally at the stage where I'm ready to slow down. I'm going to turn 45 and I'm a Leo. So, you know, you have to be celebrating big. Leo celebrate big. So I think it's 20 days till my birthday, turning 45. So it's a milestone. And I think I'm finally at the point where I am craving that. But my whole life, because I am one of those people that wanted to be a doctor since I was 3 or 4. So my whole life has been rushing towards a goal or achievement or something. And I feel like even at the socioeconomic spectrum, the whole spectrum of our socioeconomic status in the United States is rushed. Whether you feel like you have to because you work multiple jobs and, you know, have to struggle to put food on the table, or the high achievers that are CEOs and they're grinding 80 to 100 hours a week. I feel like we're all miserably stuck on this treadmill that if we just took a step off, we'd all be happier. We'd probably all be healthier. We'd probably all be wealthier, honestly, because we would have the time and space to create something more beautiful and joyful for ourselves. So that's profound. I love that you brought that up, Dr. McGregor. I love that so much. So that's great. So I hope you do acquire a magic wand and change that for everybody. Make it so that we all have more time in our days. Okay. I just want to give you maybe a couple of minutes. If there's anything else that you want to touch on regarding brain health or anxiety or anything before I ask you the wrap-up questions.
I'll just touch on supplements briefly to your point. Not having these other pieces in place and doing supplements. You can take all the B12 you want. If you're not sleeping well, it's not going to be as effective, right? But, you know, I thought, I'm just going to say what happened to me while I was in this journey, right? So I'm doing conventional medicine. I'm learning all about integrated medicine supplements. I'm like, great, I'm going to go to Whole Foods and stand in their supplement aisle, and there's some cool stuff. And, you know, there's like the section that's labeled, you know, mental health or mental well-being or whatever. And I'm like, oh, great. Like, you know, not sleeping well, you know, forget the fact that I'm an exhausted doctor with a crazy schedule, you know, where I'm on call every 3 days. That's not the problem, right? It's that I need melatonin. And melatonin, I'm going to grab that melatonin and I'm going to grab the mental well-being supplement and I'm grab, you know, some 5-HTP.
Ashwagandha. Ashwagandha is a big one.
Ashwagandha. I'm going to put all of that in my cart and I'm so excited. So excited. And I check out, I'm like, I'm going to feel so much better in 2 weeks. And I don't, right? And I'm like, well, what happened? You know, and I've spent hundreds of, you know, possibly hundreds of dollars on supplements that aren't doing a thing. It's for many reasons, right? It's because, one, were those supplements third-party tested? Two, was there any testing done? Are you taking a boatload of magnesium, but you're not magnesium deficient? You know, are you, to your point, having these other lifestyle issues that are creating a milieu of an environment that, you know, whatever you would take is not helping? Is there unresolved trauma? Do we need to see a psychotherapist? Because that's important. All of these factors are important. So just doing one individual thing. And by the way, I'm going to throw this in too. This is a bit controversial for someone who's holistic. If there's a crisis, if there's a mental health crisis, you know, your child is actively suicidal, that is the time, in my opinion, to seek acute care. That's an urgent issue that's not something that I would say reach out to your local functional medicine doctor for, because it's a slow process, right? Functional medicine is slow cooker medicine. Same with, I would imagine, lifestyle and integrative medicine, right? So don't ignore modern medicine too, like your regular conventional medicine when needed, you know? So that's, it doesn't mean that everyone needs to be on SSRIs or anything like that, but if there's a crisis, absolutely seek care for that too. So make sure we're addressing all of these factors.
Yeah, I love that. And yes, thank God for modern medicine, right? Yeah. Thank God, because there are car crashes and we do get weird tumors and masses sometimes, and things need to be addressed. So thank God we have it.
Yeah.
But you're right. You know, sometimes we need to look at some other factors. We need to see what's really going on inside our bodies with testing to really figure, you know, things out the appropriate way. So thanks for bringing that up. Well, Dr. McGregor, this has been fantastic. Thank you for sharing your perspective and your wisdom with us. I'd love for you to tell us, what do you wish more people knew?
Oh gosh, I think it just goes back to what we were saying earlier, that slowing down is okay. And in fact, it's better than okay. It's like at the core of your health.
I'm going to tattoo that on my arm so I can see it every day. Okay, next, how do you define success in this lifetime?
Oh, well, I think that's changed for me over the years and it continues to evolve. Currently, I think success is the freedom to practice medicine the way that I would like in the time that I would like and have the freedom to have my own health. So spending time with my friends and family and being able to eat well and exercise well, those are the things that define success, along with being able to help other families on their journey.
Yeah, I love that. That's lovely. A little detour. Because now I'm curious, when were you diagnosed with celiac and how has it affected your life choices?
I believe it was 2021, somewhere between 2020 and 2021. Literally the second time, so I've had COVID three times. The second time that I got COVID, I got very, very sick and I was not getting better. And I was having fatigue and digestive symptoms and, you know, heart palpitations, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm anemic and something's not right. So I actually did call my doctor. I try not to be my own doctor. And I was like, hey, can you just order a regular CBC, chem panel, basic test that we order all the time for patients? And she said to me, you know what? I think you're depressed. I think you need an SSRI. And this was on the phone. And I was like, no, I feel exhausted and tired, but this is different. I'm having symptoms. So I actually had to let her go as my doctor, unfortunately, and call a friend who ordered my tests. And I had this sensation that I, once I knew I was anemic, because it showed that I was anemic, I had the sensation that I had celiac. I just felt it intuitively in my body. And I got tested and I was positive. It's impacted my life in many ways, including my understanding of what it takes to have a food allergy in this world. It's very difficult. It's extremely challenging, especially with celiac. For those of you that don't know, you can only get 20 parts per million per day of gluten without creating an autoimmune issue in your body. And, you know, I have had to research restaurants and not book Airbnbs in rural areas where I won't be able to either cook or eat out, you know. So there's a lot of things to that that really change your perspective on being both a doctor and a patient.
Wow. So do you feel like the COVID virus was what triggered your autoimmune
conversion? That's my sense. I think there still needs to be more studies. I believe there are a couple. I haven't looked them up, but my friend told me. But there does need to be more studies. But my sense is that that massive amount of inflammation triggered the gene because I'm HLA positive. And I also suffered like some inflammation in my left eye and suffered vision loss. I developed uveitis, which for those of you who don't know, it's like a massive inflammatory process in your eye. And so this was all coinciding. So I find it difficult to believe, although as we know in science, a correlation doesn't equal a causation, but I find it difficult to believe that the COVID virus wasn't involved in some way in that process, having not suffered any symptoms up to that point.
Oh, it makes complete sense to me, but we know that's true for a lot of other autoimmune diseases too, like type 1 diabetes often is triggered by a virus, you know, so you have the setup and then you have this trigger in your life that can set you off, and COVID's just so inflammatory. So I'm sorry that that happened, but I also imagine that it's given you so much empathy, especially for the type of work that you do, knowing that autoimmune disease can be difficult to diagnose and it can affect your life in so many different ways. Do you feel like that's helped you in your current practice?
Yeah, I mean, even from, you know, I was always like a pretty big cook, but making the change to cooking everything gluten-free was massive. I also was a vegetarian at the time, and being a gluten-free vegetarian, I really couldn't get the sustenance that I needed. My protein levels would drop. And so it was fairly heartbreaking for me to start eating a little bit of meat. I eat some fish and chicken now. And that was a lot to process because I have a lot of empathy for animals as well as humans. There's, of course, so much to discuss around ethics with scientific research, which I'm not necessarily against, but I think there's just a lot of questions around these, you know, different animals' rights issues. But at the time, I had chosen to be vegetarian, and it was a big psychosocial change for not only myself, but my husband, that was just like, you know, he's a creative writer and he's a teacher. And he's like, what is this illness that you have? And what do we have to do? And like, oh my gosh, we have to buy a new toaster. So I think like all of these like little pieces that you don't necessarily think about as a doctor and you're living it as a patient, it really shines a light on how much change and how much time it takes to obtain these skills. You know, I never thought like, hey, that gluten-free pizza at a pizza restaurant may not be gluten-free, right? Because it's cooked with everything else. So those are just little things that you learn over time, but, you know, you may not think of initially.
Yeah. I mean, it seems almost impossible to be able to eat out. I think I read an article recently about they've done testing in areas in restaurants that even say that they have no cross-contamination, and they do. So I can't even imagine. I myself have, I think, wheat maybe. I don't know if it's wheat gluten or what, but I do not consume any gluten products. Most of it's wheat, obviously, you know, but I'm not celiac, thank goodness. But yeah, it's hard. It's difficult.
And why aren't service dogs covered by insurance? Sorry to interrupt you, but I just have to say that food allergy service dogs, I mean, often they're not covered by insurance, but it's just shocking to me that that's not something that's covered, you know, for an actual disability or even children that are having anaphylaxis to like shrimp and things like that. Why are those services being denied or not covered? Like, it's just really, I don't know, it just blows my mind.
Yeah, there's a lot. Okay, so back to my wrap-up questions because we don't have very much time. Is there a goal or dream that has evaded you or something that you have left on your bucket list that you'd be willing to share with us?
Oh, well, just something fun. I want to go to New Zealand and I want to go see Hobbiton because I love those movies from back in the day, The Hobbit and all of those. I just think that would be so much fun. I wish I had a loftier goal for you, but that's really what's on my bucket list.
I love that goal. That's beautiful. Yeah. I want to go to New Zealand someday too. It just seems like one of the most beautiful places. So
yeah.
Do you have a plan yet about when you'll go, or is it still kind of like a far off thing?
My hope is it'll be next summer, but okay. We will see, because you know how like
I love that
those little spirals.
Yes, beautiful. All right, what does it mean to be human?
It means having the ability to see your emotion, process the emotion, and react to it rather than just react.
I love that. Well, Dr. McGregor, thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your experience and your journey. I know that my audience would love to connect with you. So if you can tell us where we can connect with you, what products and services that you offer, that would be fantastic.
Yeah. So if you would like to find me, go to middlepathintegrativepediatrics.com. And all of my services are there. I'm offering holistic primary care pediatrics in and around Asheville, North Carolina. And I also have functional and integrative consults for those of you who are all throughout California, North Carolina, and Florida who have a pediatrician already, but have a specific chronic or recurring issue that you'd like to discuss with an integrative specialist. So check out my website.
I love that. How did you end up with a Florida license?
I briefly did some telehealth work.
Okay. I was like, I don't remember you talking about being in Florida anytime. So that's why I was wondering how Florida ended up on there.
Well, awesome. I did live in Miami for my residency, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. You did. I forgot about that part.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Dr. McGregor, thank you so much. I appreciate everything that you do. Best of luck to everything. And I hope that you have a very plantastic day.
Thanks for having me on. Bye. I'm Dr. Ellie McGregor, and I am human.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Am Human. I would be so honored if you subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. We love our listeners and take your feedback seriously. If you have questions or constructive feedback, you can email us at podcast@dryami.com. That's podcast@dryami.com. I am your host, Dr. Yami Cazorla Lancaster. I Am Human is produced by myself and Alejandra Parra. Graphics designed by Alejandra Parra. Music by Angela Sof with Glowbox Productions and edited by the Castos production team. Remember, human, you are here for a reason. Have fun, explore, and live your life to the fullest.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.